Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My guest is Harry Singh, the Deputy Assistant Director and Deputy Chief Information Officer of the Treasury Department's Bureau of Engraving and Printing. Harry, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Jason.
So it's been almost 4 years since I last talked to the Bureau of Engraving and Printing CIO, so it's been a long time. There's a ton probably to catch up with, but I'm going to start with some older priorities. So back in 2012, the Bureau of Engraving and Printing launched an ERP system. This is the albatross that usually hangs around every agency's neck, except for one, yours. You guys actually launched this successfully. It's a great story. So let's just start with the status of that system. What benefits has it been bringing you over the last 4 years? And any plans for upgrades or changes in the coming year or so?
Our ERP implementation has been very successful overall. As we know, high-quality product and customer data are critical for any organization. So one of the major benefits of the implementation is that we're moving towards a data-driven organization where we are able to collect, analyze more data than ever before, you know, with our legacy mainframe system. Secondly, we are much more engaged with the manufacturing workforce and I continue to work closely with them to implement enhancements, to capture and report on our manufacturing processes. But overall, we've really integrated a system with our financial management capabilities too, again, to improve the data quality, integrity, and ensure the right people have the right information at the right time. So it's been very successful.
A lot of this data work, I'm sure we'll get to as we talk, go through our conversation today. But what's interesting to me is the quality is better. Now, sometimes the quality is better because it's not just more is better, but it must be because you've standardized or at least you've come around and say we have these data taxonomy, if you will, that says we understand the data better. Is that the bigger difference? Not the more, but the better?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, our system overall, the ERP system comprises of, it's really six main components. That's one is data management module. Then we have MEC, you know, which is manufacturing execution console, reporting, MSS, which is manufacturing support suite, MaxMore, which is our facilities, and identity and access management. But they are a lot more, much more integrated to our production processes. And that definitely, you know, enhances overall data quality and integrity.
It's interesting you keep bringing up manufacturing. I think a lot of people forget what the Bureau of Engraving and Printing does. I mean, so manufacturing is really the key. It's really what your mission is that idea. So it's, the data is a much different type of data you're getting because I imagine the type of data you're getting is all around things you guys are printing up, is coming back to you, how fast, how many runs. I mean, it's all, as you said, the manufacturing data, that's a much different type than probably most CIOs see.
Absolutely. So BEP actually produces currency. So our, for example, our fiscal year 16 order is we printed $7.6 billion Federal Reserve notes. And for 17, it's our $7.1 billion reserves notes, you know, which has a face value of approximately $209 billion. Our manufacturing data is very critical for our success.
Looking forward a little bit, you mentioned more engaged manufacturing workforce, work more closely with them. Is the ERP, because it's a few years old now, do you start talking about an upgrade or are you in a continuous upgrade motion where you're adding and kind of taking the old and adding the new as needed?
Absolutely. R is the primary Oracle e-business suite, so the stack upgrade continues to occur. There are some major upgrades which are planned for FY17, FY18. And then we continue to work with the workforce on the new change requests that come in, enhancements which apply to our manufacturing processes, supply chain management, currency inspection systems. So we continue to focus on that.
Okay, very good. So interesting. So something to look for, as you said, 2017, 2018, and beyond. Now, part of the ERP system that we had talked about back in 2012 was a move to the cloud. In fact, the ERP was going to be put in the cloud. So is the Bureau of Engraving and Printing using the cloud for the ERP? And what about the cloud more generally? Talk a little bit about how that's impacting your technology.
So ERP is the largest cloud implementation at this time. And in addition to moving the ERP to the cloud, we recently deployed an application in Salesforce platform, which is for our internal workflow. We wanted to see, you know, so we looked at Salesforce, and then we also looked at a couple of other offerings, IBM Bluemix platform, Microsoft have the Dynamics CRM platform, but we wanted to pilot some applications, so we selected the Salesforce as a platform for software as a service and deployed an application to Salesforce platform. We also deployed our emergency notification capability, which is our BEP alert distribution system, BAD, to another FedRAMP certified vendor.
A couple of pilots there. I mean, do you foresee that once these pilots are done, what's the status of the pilots and how long until you kind of go, okay, the cloud will meet our needs, or we need to relook at this and maybe we need some kind of combination of cloud and in-house application delivery?
As I mentioned earlier, the ERP implementation is the largest one in the cloud. So currently we're assessing software as a service as a platform, but I would say next 12 to 18 months we'll reassess. But we'll continue to work in a sort of a hybrid cloud fashion. So we will certainly have certain applications which we deployed internally within the BEP infrastructure, but we definitely see a movement towards a cloud platform in the future.
Currently, I know because of so much of what you guys do can probably be sensitive, is the cloud and security pieces of the cloud, is that your biggest concern, or is it a cost issue? Or what are maybe the biggest challenges? Why wouldn't you, let's say, 12 to 18 months seems like a long time. Why not 6 to 12 months?
As you mentioned, innovation, delivery, and cybersecurity. So with a focus on IT enablement and cyber being a critical piece, and BEP being a manufacturing organization, we want to make sure there's certain data sets or certain elements which are located within our VLAN of the enterprise, which are private VLANs. So that's the reason we'll continue to see the hybrid. But absolutely, BEP is a big proponent of cloud implementation. As you know, from 4 years ago, we were probably one of the largest federal agencies to deploy an ERP system in a cloud. So we continue to push in that direction.
A lot of times when you talk about the cloud, there's always that concern about the security side. And I was just talking to, for instance, the Bureau of Labor Statistics recently for my show, and they started looking down the email path for the cloud, and that was some concern because of the sensitivities with how they get data from certain people, certain of their, if you will, private sector business customers. Have you guys are looking at other areas for cloud beyond kind of the mission critical, some of the email collaboration, some of the more commodity type of IT?
So we are in discussions with some vendors, which are the prominent vendors, on overall, as you look at Office 365, how do we move really our email or Office communication and collaboration, what the feasibility there is to moving them into cloud. But that's just an initial discussion phase. We do plan to pilot those in FY 17 and 2018 and see where it goes.
Interesting. Now, are you guys also working through the larger Treasury Department? Because I know the CIO there, Sunny Bagwalia, he is obviously a big proponent of cloud. He came from, obviously, his time at GSA. They did a lot of cloud there. Are you guys also working with them to look at, if you will, enterprise cloud services?
Absolutely. Absolutely. As you know, for the shared service in Satara, Sunny and us, we continue to collaborate together. And we work very well. And, with Sunny's leadership there, he's been very transparent with the bureaus. And I'm sure we'll see a lot of success, within the Treasury and the bureaus, and continue to see the push towards the cloud.
All right. So I guess something to look forward to as we enter, as you said, 2017, 2018 and beyond, a lot going on. Harry, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can jump into some of that big data discussion. My guest is Harry Singh, the Deputy Assistant Director and Deputy Chief Information Officer of the Treasury Department's Bureau of Engraving and Printing. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest is Harry Singh, the Deputy Assistant Director and Deputy CIO of the Treasury Department's Bureau of Engraving and Printing. Now, Harry, before break, we're going through some old priorities from the last time I spoke with the CIO of the Bureau of Engraving and Printing, which was about 4 years ago, 2012. We talked a lot about the ERP system, the fact it's, number one, it was a successful project. Number two, it's your largest cloud implementation. Let's continue down that path a little bit and talk about big data as it relates back to the ERP system. I think last time I spoke with the CIO, one of the things was a big data analytics on top of that ERP, and how is that going to affect the Bureau of Engraving and Printing's mission? So let's talk a little bit about the big data piece as it relates back to the ERP system.
Data analytics is a huge component of any business. And from a value perspective, it'll definitely assist you with decision-making, new product and services enhancements for our manufacturing workforce, and we're looking at overall cost reduction. So we continuously work with the manufacturing workforce to look at the data we collect for new relationships and patterns, internal supporting performance and quality matrix, and then overall looking at opportunities to improve process and quality as it relates to our currency spoilage, trending there, maintenance of our manufacturing equipment. So that's very critically important for BEP. We recently awarded an enterprise data management / enterprise performance management contract, which is focused on data governance and the performance matrix, the KPIs, to implement them enterprise-wide. And with the governance framework, you know, we're in the process of implementing. We look at the data analytics tools. Currently, we're looking at Tableau, SAS, and Oracle Analytics. We've not made a decision on the tool, but that effort is in progress.
All right, so I want to go back to the contract. Can you talk a little bit more about it? When you talk about an enterprise data and performance management, are we going to set up a data lake? Are we going to set up, what are you going to do through that contract?
So the focus is really, how do we establish the data governance model across the enterprise, which is really, as I talked earlier, our main focus areas, main application, the production, how do we tie them together, make sense of the data, provide the right data to the folks on the production floor, and with the governance, and leverage the analytics tools to provide that visualization, you know, which folks on the floor can tie into. So that is the ultimate objective with that.
All this talk about data makes me ask, are you looking at, have you hired a chief data officer or chief data scientist or somebody kind of to oversee all this data effort work?
So there has been discussions. So I think, so we do plan to hire a chief data officer, but we've not moved really with the actual to fill the billet yet. But a discussion has happened internally especially with the contract award, and we are in the process of setting up a data governance council. But I agree with you, you know, with the CDO role is important, you know, within any organization now, because everything is really data driven. High quality product, you know, customer data, you know, those really are critical components of any business.
So it's interesting that you've had that discussion. I'm going to have to, sorry, when you start getting calls from people who are going to start applying for a job that does not yet exist, but maybe you'll get a great candidate that way as well. So something maybe to catch up with you later on. The ERP provides a ton of data, but there's other data tools or other opportunities for data analytics. You talked about the fact that you're starting to look at some tools from SAS, from Linux, from Tableau. What's the kind of timing around that? And generally speaking, without going into any of those specific vendors, what types of tools are you really trying to get to?
BEP being a manufacturing workforce, so ease of use is very important. From a change management, adaption of change, for a person who's on the production floor, we want to make sure that the tool, anything we deploy, is ease of use. So functional requirement is very important for us as we look at Tableau, SAS, or Oracle Analytics. And from a time frame perspective, as I mentioned, we recently awarded the contract, so we want to put a structure around it, you know, internally, configuration management process around it, work with the manufacturing workforce to establish a data governance council, you know, to identify the stakeholders from each of the directorates. Once we do that, then we're going to go into the tool selection phase. So I would say about 6 to 9 months, that's the time frame.
All right, now this one you can definitely blame me on, because now you're going to get calls from contractors on this one, if you haven't already. So, all right, very good. We'll look forward to you guys going out with that acquisition whenever it's appropriate. I imagine there's no acquisition strategy yet. I'm sure you're still in that early phase where you haven't decided you're going to use a schedule or a GWAC or full and open. There's no decision made around that yet?
No, nothing yet.
Okay. So as you said, there's time. I want to move over to another kind of related older priority around mobility. Obviously, data is big. You got to get to that data somehow. About 4 years ago, Bureau of Engraving Printing was looking at the bring your own device idea. And this was very popular over the last few years. Some agencies have stepped into it. Others have held back. Where are you guys at with BYOD? And then let's talk more broadly about how mobile devices are impacting your mission.
So overall, going back to from where we left off 4 years ago, BYOD was implemented and was very well received by our workforce. And that's really primarily used for our communication and collaboration of our email, office suite. We did perform a market research and analysis of the capabilities that were available back then. And we made a selection to deploy the Good app and Good share. So currently, we only support Apple devices iOS platform for the BYOD program. We made a decision to support iOS based on cyber assessment we conducted 4 years ago. For internal BEP use, we continue to support the BlackBerry as a platform for bearer-issued devices. And with the recent acquisition, as you may be aware of, Good by BlackBerry, and BlackBerry's recent announcement from last month that they're going to discontinue Classic because of their collaboration with Samsung. So we are reassessing our path forward. You know, as we have a mix of BYOD and bring our own mobile devices in use, you know, what should be our path forward? Overall, more interoperability on both Android and iOS. But the program overall has been very successful, and it's really enhanced the communication and collaboration for our mobile workforce.
Interesting that you guys implemented BYOD, but only for iOS devices. Part of the reason you said was a security issue. Does the same, as far as you can tell now, security challenges hold true today? Or has, because you implemented Good, and Good is as you said, has an Android point to it, do you foresee moving in that direction to let BYOD for Android devices too?
That is definitely the plan, because mobility is here, and it's a game for future. And from an IT enablement, we want to make sure, you know, we are flexible on both Android and iOS, and also if we continue to use BlackBerry. But we, as I mentioned earlier, there were some cyber concerns which we identified with the Android platform 4 years ago. We did do a reassessment a couple of years ago, and we still continue to only support iOS devices. But as I mentioned earlier, we'll reassess our path forward, you know, with the recent BlackBerry announcement to see where our BYOD platform goes.
The other, I think, piece to this is when you did BYOD, a lot of agencies have been kind of challenged with this idea of, do we do a stipend? Do we not do a stipend? You know, who owns the device, the data on the device? How'd you guys set up the BYOD concept so it met your needs, but also obviously met the employees' needs?
The reason for the Good app there was twofold. We were able to set up a Good app container internally on the device, which is really a separate piece from your personal device. So the users were comfortable there. And then from a policy perspective, you know, we did have, once we issued the Good app license, you know, we did let them do a kind of not really a sign-off, but that disclaimer is there that the data is what the user is responsible for. And I think, you know, with Good app and the way it's structured, so it doesn't really have a significant impact on the overall data usage for the user. So that has worked well.
Well, that's good. So meaning that if I play a lot of Pokemon Go and I end up using all my data, that's not BEP's problem. That's my problem. That's
exactly
what comes down to it, right?
You just won't be able to play in our good container.
Exactly. You can't play the Pokemon. There you go. Hopefully you haven't had that problem.
No.
though, knowing Pokemon Go, the BEP, you know, your office is probably some kind of gym or something, right?
exactly.
Probably. Looking forward, you talked a little bit about reassessing the path forward. Timing on that, do you expect a contract action? Or because you already have that relationship with Good and BlackBerry, you probably will go down at least that same path from an MDM perspective, a mobile device management perspective?
You hit it right on what our approach will be. So we're reassessing where Good is progressing from a BlackBerry acquisition and a discontinuation of Classic. So since we already have Good app and Good share, it works well for our users. So we'll reassess how BlackBerry supports the Android platform and how they really integrate Good into the infrastructure. So that's something that we are working closely with BlackBerry, and we'll know more on that, but no contract action.
All right. Well, that's good news, I guess. One less thing you're going to have to worry about people calling you about. Well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can jump in and talk about some new priorities, since we've spent the first part of the show talking about older priorities. My guest is Harry Singh, the Deputy Assistant Director and Deputy Chief Information Officer of the Treasury Department's Bureau of Engraving and Printing. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest is Harry Singh, the Deputy Assistant Director and Deputy Chief Information Officer of the Treasury Department's Bureau of Engraving and Printing. Now, Harry, before break, we spent the first part of the show all about old priorities, the ERP system, mobility, big data. What's left? What else are you working on? What are you trying to get done over the next 6 or 9 months?
The efforts in progress currently, as I mentioned, about our Salesforce platform. We recently deployed one of the applications of Salesforce. We are continuing to leverage the Salesforce to deploy a few other applications, which are essential for our mission, mostly related to our human resource applications, workflow apps. So that's so we'll continue to leverage the FedRAMP services to enhance collaboration with our vendors' partners. So we do some data sharing with our external partners and suppliers of our manufacturing equipment and supplies. So we're in the process of setting a platform, a FedRAMP-certified platform, where we can do sharing of data. And in addition to email communication or secure email, how do we set up something with our partners or vendors to collaborate better? Data analytics is something we talked about. That's a key focus for us for next 12 to 18 months. Increased mobility. You know, I think we touched on the Good app and our path forward there. And overall, all these activities I see IT as an enabler for the core mission functions, you know, which is a manufacturing workforce.
So a few things to touch upon. I want to go back to the Salesforce discussion a little bit. I know that came up during our cloud discussion. You said you have one app there now. You want to leverage it for some other apps. And when you talk about the types of apps you want to put on there, I think you said HR and maybe workflow apps. Is that correct?
That is correct. So something related to, again, HR or management function. But I'll give you some, you know, internally we have our PTI or telework program, also time to hire initiative within HR. And that's all really internal communication, collaboration, workflow approvals. So Salesforce, it does very well workflow and also the visual dashboard capabilities. So we made a decision to pursue those, and at least for the initial go round, you know, go with 4 to 5 apps and assess the user acceptance there on the software service platform. But that's where our focus has been.
Traditionally, did these software live in your own data center? And the benefits of moving to the cloud are both obviously scalability, flexibility. So if you have to hire 100 people, 500 people, you can kind of scale up to it. And then also probably is there cost savings? Are those some of the benefits you're looking at, or are there others?
Absolutely. I mean, I think as I mentioned, the key focus here is of my has been innovation, delivery, and cyber. You know, with the FedRAMP certified cloud, and the Salesforce cloud as certified as FedRAMP. So that was an initial check. And then we continue to innovate in line with overall Treasury and OMB initiatives on the shared services and cloud services transitioning there. So, and then we identify the applications internally, you know, which may serve us better and provide ease of use capabilities and dashboard. But so that's the reason we continue to pursue the cloud initiative.
And just so I understand, the current setup or the former setup was you hosted internally to your data center. Is that the way it was done?
That is correct.
So moving it to the cloud, how big of a lift has it been? So far, I know it's one app, but you have a few others moving to Salesforce. How big of a lift has this been for you guys?
I think initially, with any change you implement, you run into some challenges because the platform is new. The technology is new, and the users are not really used to, you know, they get the biggest, always any implementation, the change management is critical. But we've been working closely with the users to transition them to Salesforce. But initially, there's a challenge. That's the reason we focused on one application, you know, which had a limited set of users, which we were able to deploy successfully. And as part of the deployment, there were some issues we encountered, but overall it was a very successful implementation. And now we're just taking a step forward in the direction.
And hopefully the other applications, as you put them on Salesforce, well, you can follow a very similar model and not have any challenges. Of course, it's always the people, right? That's the hardest challenge sometimes.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about the other piece of this, which was, I think, related, which is the data sharing with partners and suppliers. You said you want to set up kind of another cloud platform for this secure sharing of information, collaboration. Talk a little bit about your thinking behind that effort.
Internally, we have our SharePoint, which is a platform used where we can give access, secure access to an external vendor. But what you run into, the issues which you run into is their security policies, you know, overall setting up security agreements, you know, between us and the vendors. So approach we're taking is, you know, is there a FedRAMP cloud or service which we may use to collaborate as a subscription-based model to really share data among, you know, among our suppliers, among our vendors, among our customer, Fed Reserve Board being them. But that's where our focus has been. How do you really share data and collaborate better? If they're looking for data, example, on ink consumption, you know, that's SICPA being our vendor, how do we collaborate with them better to provide that data so we can work better?
When you set this up, what's the challenge of setting it up? I mean, meaning would the cloud with an identity management piece connected to it really suffice? It has got to be maybe bigger than username and password. Or do you need something that's kind of lives on your data center, but they can get a secure VPN to get through? What's kind of the thought process right now?
We've looked into the secure VPN with our internal, as I mentioned, with the SharePoint platform. But absolutely, as we move into the FedRAMP service, if we look into it, so cyber is very important. So is, you know, some of the things which came from the initial cyber spend, you know, the PIV usage. So that is very critical. So for multi-factor authentication, but cyber is going to be the critical piece as we share data and deliver the service.
All right. Well, I definitely want to talk more about cyber, and we will talk about the Sprint as well and the impact it had on BEP as well as Treasury more broadly. But before we go on that path, from a timing standpoint, when do you expect to have this new kind of data sharing platform set up? And again, I'll ask the same question. Is there an acquisition potentially in the works?
We are internal discussions on acquisitions, but the plan to implement the service is in about NFI 17.
All right. Well, something more to look out forward to. I appreciate that. Let's jump over to cybersecurity since you brought it up, and there's plenty to talk about with cybersecurity. As you mentioned, Cyber Sprint happened, big focus on two-factor authentication. Talk a little bit about, from your perspective, how much of an impact did the Cyber Sprint have on the Bureau of Engraving and Printing, and talk more broadly about your cybersecurity efforts with things like, you know, the Continuous Diagnostics and Mitigation Program, the Einstein Program, both from DHS.
We all know cybersecurity is one of the most important challenges for any federal organization. And BEP has always dedicated significant attention and resources on cyber side. On the Cyber Sprint recommendations, you know, we were one of the first bureaus to implement PIV within Treasury. So they were already, most of them were already part of our infrastructure. So we required some modifications to address the OMB mandates. And on the CDM side, you know, we're working closely with DO, and the DO meaning Departmental Office of the Treasury, and other bureaus on the phase one, you know, where the task order has been awarded. And we are working with the department and the vendor on the overall implementation of the phase one initiatives. And then for our internet access, you know, we are part of our overall Treasury cloud. We leverage a trusted internet connection and the GSOC, you know, where Einstein has already been integrated, and GSOC really monitors it. So the Treasury, I believe, you know, has really a mature implementation on that already and currently in place and in use.
So we want to go back to the Cyber Sprint and the PIV implementation. What was the biggest challenge there, and how are you guys using it? Is it just for the network access? Do you have it connected to the physical side, and are you using it for instance, is it a one, you know, single sign-on for all your applications? Can you give me a sense of how it's working?
First of all, on the network side, it's fully implemented. And then on the, for example, our multifunction devices, we worked with the vendor to integrate PIV on the implementation. On the app side, we use an entity and access management for a single sign-on integration. But there are still some apps, you know, which we leverage the AD single sign-on, not necessarily the PIV. But our plan is to transition then over to and have a total integrated PIV implementation to include all the network and apps.
I think that's part of where OMB wants people to go to, because it's one thing to get onto the network, but it's another thing to get apps to apps to apps. So if you know, the big concern around cybersecurity is, if I spearfish you and I get on the network, can I hop once I'm inside? It's one thing to stop me at the front door, but once I'm in, am I impossible to find? And I think by having the PIV on apps, I may be able to get through your front door, but then there's a whole bunch of other locked doors and windows that I may not be able to get through. Is that kind of your thinking as well?
Absolutely. And we continue to evolve on that.
And from a cybersecurity perspective, we know CDM is one piece to the puzzle. We know Einstein is one piece. We know PIV is one piece. Can you talk generally speaking, because I understand there's always some sensitivities around cybersecurity. What else are you looking at? What other things are you doing around things like configuration management, software patching, and the like?
The good thing is, on the cyber side, there's always an external governance and the data call submissions. So, you know, on monthly, you're really getting assessed. That includes everything on the assets, you know, your systems, your network, your desktops, whatever have you. So Treasury and OMB, you will continue to do with the MAC submissions and external data calls, and then it's a cyber dashboard. So every quarterly, you know, we'll meet with the Treasury executives to, and where cyber is also one of the critical elements, and the performance is assessed there. So overall, I think it's a very well-governed program at the Treasury level, and we continue to support that.
Well, very nice. It's important that the focus stays on cybersecurity. We see that every day, and we're often reminded. Harry, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can jump into some other things like innovation and digital services, and of course, FITARA. We got to talk about that. But first, we'll take a break. My guest is Harry Singh, the Deputy Assistant Director and Deputy CIO of the Treasury Department's Bureau of Engraving and Printing. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest is Harry Singh, the Deputy Associate Director and Deputy Chief Information Officer of the Treasury Department's Bureau of Engraving and Printing. Now, Harry, we talked a lot about your old priorities. We talked about some new priorities. One big thing that I hear from every CIO that I've talked to for my show is always innovation and digital services. Those two seem to go hand in hand. I'm sure it's no different at the Bureau of Engraving and Printing. Talk a little bit about how you're promoting innovation and digital services.
To promote innovation or digital services, engagement at every level of organization is important. So our team continues to work with all levels of the personnel, you know, starting from manufacturing floor, facilities, human resources, engineering, engraving, you know, to our executive team to identify needs, how do we can identify opportunities to improve the business functions, you know, with the ERP implementation, how do we provide the data that the folks need on the production floor and when they need it, the time they need it, and do they have access to the right data? So we collaborate closely with the overall objective, you know, to improve our business processes in support of our mission, you know, which is to produce currency notes, which are trusted worldwide.
It's interesting you're bringing all these people together. Do you have any kind of, and I'll use the term, innovation council, or how do you ensure you're getting the right feedback and you're presenting ideas to the right people who user testing, user experiences are all big buzzwords in this innovation world?
You know, we have internal CCB, and then we have user advisory groups where we include stakeholders from other directors of the BEP, could be HR, could be engraving, manufacturing floor. And then from the stakeholders, there's full representation, a lead, a business PM lead for every project, for every initiative, who identify the function needs. Then we map back to the IT enablement or on our end. But we continue to work on the CCB on our priorities. You know, what do we really need to push for the next release? But the governance structure is there to promote change.
And just to be clear, when you say CCB, it's the...
Upper Configuration Control Board, internally.
Okay. So it's just part of ensure that you're not breaking what you already are using by putting new technologies or new capabilities in.
Absolutely.
And talk a little bit about the idea of the project management or program management lead for every initiative. Is that someone in your office? Is there a separate office that does kind of program and project management?
We do have a PPMO office, which is on the business function side. The focus there is strategy-wise, where do we take the program management arm? Internally within IT, we have an IT division, which has all the PMs. And most of our PMs are certified FACB PM certified personnel. So there's an IT PM who will be responsible for the overall project management, work breakdown structure, acting as a liaison internally within IT offices. But on the business side, we'll have a system owner and a business PM who will drive the business function. And IT PM is responsible for translating those functional requirements into technical requirements, and then working internally within an IT organization to enable that change, to implement the change. But we work closely with the business function, you know, to implement that change.
So one of the biggest challenges I've heard over the years is this idea of, how do you ensure that the business needs are being met and not just the new shiny technology? Because even the business people hear about something and go, oh, we have to have that. That's the greatest thing since sliced bread. And you as the tech side goes, okay, we love that stuff too. And then in the end, it may not actually meet the business needs. I imagine that's where these project management, these program managers come in to say, let's make sure we outline the business needs and what technology can we use to meet those business needs versus what technology is there and doesn't really even meet our business needs.
That is correct. I think, Jason, you mentioned it. And from a user perspective, most of the times, as you've seen, you know, we talked about change management is important, but the user sometimes tend to focus on a solution. You know, well, they'll say, oh, well, I would like to really buy this. So it's always, as I mentioned, the engagement and building the trust with the user community, with a business function proponent, is very important. Once we have the trust built in, then they actually come to us with a requirement instead of a solution. So that's an important factor, you know, which we have really developed in the past 3 years or so, is building the trust where a user is coming up with a requirement instead of, you know, coming to us with a solution.
Harry, one of the things about innovation is this big push around digital services. This idea of back in the 2000s, the government and a lot of industry took paper processes and made them, you know, electronic. It was the kind of the lift and shift. And now there's this move to go from this lift and shift to transactional, to really think about the business process, to really use the digitization, if you will, in a much better way. Have you guys started to go down that path yet a little bit? Are you guys, do you have a digital services office? Are you working with, you know, the folks from GSA's 18F or the White House's U.S. Digital Service?
Overall, on the digitization and the 18F, we did work with them when we released a notification on our $10 currency redesign program. So 18F was a really helped us to get that website up and running, where we gathered feedback from the users overall. But internally, we have really moved away from paper onto digitals. We recently have a project in progress where we're looking at our internal forms, you know, which are for workflow functions, you know, approval for laptops or approval for certain types of access. How do we digitize them? So we've incorporated them into our with our PIV implementation, digital signatures, and identity and access management. So we have done quite a bit of progress on the digitization.
And what about from the customer side, the suppliers or just people who want to buy currency, you know, somebody who wants to buy the $2 bills that, you know, are so hard to get? Is there any kind of digitization that's happening on the kind of the public side of BEP?
We did make quite a few changes, you know, from a customer end on the currency ordering piece. But BEP is a little different from Mint. You know, Mint is very much focused on numismatic and the souvenir sales. And on our end, you know, that's it's overall the souvenirs, it's a smaller piece. We focus more on currency production than on the numismatic currency.
Okay, well, it's good to know because I think, you know, again, there's so much focus on these digital services and such. I want to shift over to FITARA, the Federal IT Acquisition Reform Act. We've talked a little bit about how you work with the Treasury CIO, but I always like to talk to the bureau-level CIOs and find out how FITARA is affecting them. Give me a sense, how are you seeing the impact of FITARA, and what does it mean for the way you look at technology?
You know, overall, we're very fully engaged with Treasury CIO on the shared service and FITARA initiatives, and vice versa. As I mentioned earlier, Sunny and his team have been very transparent with the bureaus on the overall strategy, path forward to ensure compliance, you know, with the overall governance process there. So we have a great relationship there. And then currently, we already leverage some of the enterprise contracts for IT products, you know, our phone service, our acquisition support, PKI, our learning management solution, which is TLMS. And as I touched earlier, our Treasury Network, you know, which is a trusted internet connection. So all those are shared service initiatives. But additionally, we're working with Treasury on some of the options to look at the managed print services, you know, Microsoft licensing and some of the other procurements to centralize those, which, you know, will definitely realize cost savings there.
And from your perspective as a CIO, is your relationship with the BEP CFO acquisition side, HR side, are those relationships changed at all? What I seem to find is a lot of bureaus seem to already have good relationships with those other CXOs.
We work very closely, but I think FITARA has really got us even closer together, you know, with the overall CIO and CFO collaboration. So I think it's really the overall, as the governance for FITARA, you know, I see it really a new foundation for technology management, but it has brought that CXO community really closely together. So recently, we participated in a talent management suite discussion, you know, where we had representation from all the bureaus, including the human resource officers, your CFO and CIOs. So that was an excellent collaboration effort overall.
And this was to create a talent management suite, or was it to figure out, make sure your guys at BEP are recruiting the best candidates with the right skill sets?
Overall, to take a look at the talent management suite. That was just one of the initiatives from a cost savings of shared services.
Harry, we're almost out of time. Before I let you go, I always like to ask two important questions. We'll start with the what is your IT budget for 2016? And you know my next question is going to go back to that vendor discussion we had earlier. So let's start with your IT budget for 2016.
Approximately about $65 million on the operating IT budget overall. And the capital is about $15 million or so.
All right. And then vendors are going to be interested to know more about how to work with your office. How do you like them to approach you, phone calls, meetings? Give me a sense of how what message you want to send to them.
I believe in having an internal and also external relationship, internally with our workforce and externally with our vendors. And overall, you know, we continue to look for proven modern technology, you know, to support our mission for both our administrative functions and also the manufacturing operations. And additionally, cyber is very important to that. So from business partners, we'll work with the vendors who help us sustain a secure and modern IT infrastructure. And as I touched on the three focused areas, so we always look for vendors who are going to help us with innovation, which is really looking at the positive impact of the technology and IT as enablement. Delivery, how do we really execute with the current climate, budget climate, and the support on the shared services side. And the last piece is cyber, which is part of everything we do. So those are three focus areas for support we look for.
All right, well, that's very good advice. Gives people a head start of when they come to talk to you. If they don't have those three focus areas in their pitch, then they might as well just go away. Harry, unfortunately, we're out of time, but this was a fascinating conversation. I'd like to thank my guest, Harry Singh, the Deputy Associate Director and Deputy Chief Information Officer of the Treasury Department's Bureau of Engraving and Printing. Harry, thank you so much for taking the time to join me.
Thank you, Jason.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.